Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
They roll down to the pub. They roll up their sleeves. Fresh from the train and the office and the dirt of the city, melting away in the moon underwater.
I'm Robbie Knox, and I'm the landlord of the Moon Underwater, a mystical place where guests create their dream pub.
Afternoon, Robbie.
Oh, hello, Dan. How are you today? Oh,
very well, thanks.
What's your news? How's your news?
It's all good.
Where's your news?
Where's my news? It's, everything's fine.
What have you done in this past week?
Well, I have been ice skating.
How was that?
Yeah, it was nice because the estuary froze over.
Yeah.
A couple of hours.
Does that
this morning?
Yep, yeah. Very quick freezing the estuary.
It does. It's once a day.
Yep.
Did a bit of ice skating. I'm a very good ice skater, are you?
Are you?
Yeah.
No, I'm not, no. The first time I ever went ice skating as a kid, I got warned by a parent about the risk of having your fingers cut off by an ice skate blade. And from that point on, I've been terrified of it.
Whenever you see blood on an ice rink, it's one of the most toe-curling things makes my
Is that a common thing?
Well, when I was a kid, I felt like most times I went to the ice rink, there'd be a few spots of blood somewhere.
Well, my parents' warning and my general fear of ice rinks are vindicated.
Yeah.
Do you know what I really enjoyed this weekend, Dan?
What?
It was your performance of the Moon Underwater Talent Show.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I had no idea you were so good at impressions. No idea at all. I actually noted down some of my favourite ones that you did, and I thought it would be great if you could just do them again. Would you mind?
Yeah.
Because what brought the house down was your David Attenborough.
Yeah.
Go on, just give us a little bit.
It's quite good, my David Attenborough.
Go on then.
Let me think. So I was just trying to imagine that David's in the, Sir David, as I call it.
Yeah.
He's in the jungle, maybe viewing some zebra.
Go on.
Yeah. We are in the jungle looking at some zebra.
Yeah, I do remember when you did it was disappointingly good, actually. Yeah. I'll tell you what was really good. What I really enjoyed, though, was your Margaret Thatcher.
Yes. Did you like that
Yeah,
one?
Yeah, give us a little bit.
Yeah.
What you do, the lady's not returning.
Yeah,
that
I mean, that's what I was thinking would do. This lady is not for turning.
Yeah. Another one I thought was quite good because it's not as a distinct an accent. Was your Margot Robbie? Because I mean, personally, I couldn't really even think how she speaks because you only see her in films and that.
No,
but you really nailed it. Everyone around said you nailed it.
It's a difficult one to nail. You're right. Yeah. So I'll do a line.
Yep.
From Barbie.
Mm-hmm.
Where she goes.
Did do one with her as her, though, not really playing a role.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Of her accepting an award for Barbie.
Sure.
Yep.
Yep.
Thank you for this award for Barbie.
Yep. I tell you the one I really enjoyed, my favourite, though.
I don't remember it going on this long.
No, it did a while. And the one that was brilliant and not at all problematic was your Snoop. Do you want to do that now, or you're all right?
Yeah, no, I'm more.
You're right. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Well, do you know what? I would push you to do that. But look who
I felt like I was on a roll at the
you
point.
You were on a roll. Yeah. Look who is striding confidently into the moon underwater is the comedian Jessica Fostergue. Jessica, how are you?
Hi, really Hi, well. Jessica. Thanks for having me.
Thank
Lovely
you.
Gaff. Nice pub.
It's all right, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you like what we've done with the pewter?
Yeah, I really like what you've done with the pewter. Also, straight off the bat, I need to tell you that at my 10th birthday party, I went to an ice skating rink and my friend William Spickett got his hand run over by her. By a blade, and it was there was a lot of blood, but the fingers didn't fully come off.
Okay,
they left hanging, were they? Okay.
Yeah. Fully makes it worse.
Yeah, and I've used his real whole name.
Yeah,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah,
it's just got over the trauma of that, and now
pretty much haven't seen him since.
Oh, so, try yeah. back in. Yeah, yeah. Like, reminded of those horrific days.
Old Willie, three fingers.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you a keen ice skater?
No.
Have you ever done it since?
No interest.
No, me neither. Yeah, yeah. How was your journey here through the realms?
Really good, actually. Really nice. Yeah, I love it when I am only forced to use one form of transport. And for this, I used Blinks and Clicks. And I loved
it's good
it.
Though,
yeah,
isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. Yeah. Easy peasy.
Yeah. Whereabouts did you grow up, Jessica?
I grew up in a little town called Swanage in Dorset, and latterly in an even littler village called Langton Matravers next to the town of Swanage
what?
In Dorset. Langton Matravers.
That's incredible. Wow. It sounds like a detective from New York in the 70s.
I know. And there's like all the road, well, there are only about four roads, but they've all got great names. There's a road called Crack Lane. Which we all had a little car crash on in our late teens when we were learning.
At the same time?
Or no, luckily not at once. Yeah, yeah. Okay. No, no.
Good.
Yeah.
And what were your first pub experiences like?
Pretty fun, actually, but in a very... I was born in 1983, so parenting was quite different then. And so I spent quite a lot. I spent quite a lot of time in the pub alone. my dad would take me to a pub called the Ferry Boat that we called the Furry Goat. And
which is a good name.
Yeah, it was awesome, and it's sad because it's flats now, but it was brilliant, and it had this incredible garden with a stream running through it, and like a rock, probably a small rockery, but it felt like this incredible. When my parents went with friends and their kids were there, it was amazing for like hide and seek. And we'd always get like really luminous, unhealthy panda pop drinks and like, you know, endless cheap crisps. It was awesome. Yeah. And you could play for hours in there. Now the idea of like leaving your children by an open water source, just the layers of like loads of sugar and chemicals, and just putting them next to a small river and seeing them in a couple of hours is pretty frowned upon. Yeah, but I used my favourite memory of going there is with my dad, and it had a family room and it had a pool table. Yeah. And he would sit in there drinking scrumpy, and he would get me a scrumpy shandy, which is probably the equivalent of a sort of a weak lager. So I taught myself. As a half-cut child, I taught myself to play pool and darts and had a great time in the family
that's
room
a
of,
proper
the, of the
pub
fairy
education.
Game. Yeah, yeah.
It's very 80s and 90s. Yes, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
As you say, it doesn't happen now. Where I found that does happen now is Bulgaria.
Right.
It would have been 20. It was just before pandemic in 2020. It was January 2020. I took my eldest, my daughter, who at the time would have been 8, and my son Otto would have been 5. And I took just me and the two of them. I took to Bulgaria skiing for a week. My wife doesn't ski, and my youngest was too young, so I took them there. And on the first day, Kitty, who was 8, she was went for ski lessons. She was the youngest of her age group for the ski lessons, and she got quite tired. And I was just skiing on my own for a little bit while they're off in their lessons. I went past the pub and she just sat in the pub on her own. So I went in. I went, oh, hi, Kits. She said, oh, hello. I said, why are you in the pub? And she said, I got tired. So after a couple of hours, the man said I could sit in here while the other ones were doing their lessons. And I think the guy, the ski director, knew the landlord of the pub.
Phew.
She just sat there and she had given me some money. And first of all, I was like, this is terrible. I was also like, so it's kind of working.
Yeah.
And it's like no one's really, there's no real problem there. She's quite happy. She doesn't want to ski too long. And if I kick off, all that's going to happen is she's not going to go to the ski lessons.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to spend all the time with her. So I just thought, I'm just going to kind of let this slide. And it worked.
Amazing.
And I would go ski. I'd drop her off a ski lesson. I'd go skiing for a bit. Then in the afternoon, I'd pop in and see if she's in the pub.
Yeah.
Later, or sometimes she'd be with another girl eating chips. Sometimes she wouldn't be. Sort of thing. And that went on for a week. It was absolutely fine. So,
great.
What's correct? What's not correct? Who
would
you judge?
Yeah, live and let live.
Yeah. The police are to judge.
They're great, isn't they? Yeah. And social services. But they're not invited.
There's a market, isn't there, for probably a pub creche.
Oh, I mean, these days, yeah. But 100%.
I read something a while ago, and it was talking about that sort of Gen X sort of growing up was the first real generation where our mothers were the first women who went to work en masse. And so there wasn't the structures in place for childcare that there is now. And so, like, I remember my mum was a teacher, so it worked out quite well for school holidays, but there'd be days when my school terms didn't quite line up with hers, or she'd have to be in school. And I would literally get, I probably was about 13, 14 at the time, I would literally get thrown out of the house at like 8 in the morning, or just with my friends, we'd just wander the streets and come back about 3:30 or whatever and go back home. But I also remember one day we wanted to get something from our house, but we couldn't get in. So we went and we noticed like the tiny bathroom window was open. So we got like a small child that we knew and put him through the window to unlock the house. So we came back and went, we wanted something from the house. So we broke in. Mum was obviously like slightly horrified, like the house security was so lax that it was that easy to
incredible.
Do.
Incredible.
So yeah, different times.
Yeah.
We're going to get into picking your drinks to design your dream pub, Jessica. But first of all, Dan, do you want to explain your bell?
Oh, yeah. Here's my bell.
Oh, lovely.
I'm very proud of it.
It's lovely noise.
It's lovely.
Do you know what? That used to instill in me a kind of like, last orders. But now, and this is really nerdy, I go to a gym where if somebody gets a PB, they ring that.
So really?
Oh, well done.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
nice.
Yeah, so I've got a different association with the noise, so that's nice.
And do you trust people that they're not just doing it for a bit?
Most of them. Couple of quite toxic men. No.
Yeah.
But just the vast majority of the membership. Yeah.
Number one. Lovely.
That's nice. Yeah. Dance isn't for that.
Yeah, no. It's not for that.
What's that
it's
for?
It's for if one of your choices, sometimes one of your choices will appear.
Yeah.
Or materialise on the bar.
Oh.
Can't promise anything, but that's sort of the magic of the moon underwater. So if you hear that bell, it means that one of your choices for your pub.
Oh, wow.
You can then have a taste if you want. There's no requirement to. You don't take it away with you. Yeah. You can look at it. You can do whatever you want, but it may appear through the magic of the moon underwater. Whatever, however it works. I'm not quite caught up on all the lore since we took over. But there's a lot.
It's confusing.
Yeah, John Robbins is quite a lot of world building that we're yet to really fully master.
Doing our best.
We do love it.
Yeah, that's all they can ask of us.
Yeah.
Legally.
Right.
First of all, you get two choices on draft.
Okay.
What is your first one going to be?
It's going to be a scrumpy called Lulworth Skipper.
Wow. Is this one from your youth?
Yeah, this is one. Well, it probably wasn't available back when I was really very young, but I wanted to pick a local scrumpy. The sort of thing I'd have been given as a shandy at the ferry boat as a 5-year-old, and the sort of thing that they will serve at, and I tried to look at what was on draft, but it's the sort of pub that's not going to have a website that gives you that information. My favourite pub in the whole world, in the corporeal, boring, real world, called the Square and Compass, and it's in the next village along to Langton Matravers. It's called Worth Matravers, and it's a walking pub. And it's a folk pub, so there's always folk music on in it. It's tiny. They only do pasties. They just started to do a vegetarian pasty. It's like the most eccentric, friendly, and I think they only do a few real ales and about 10 local ciders, and it's incredible. And they'll even, because you're encouraged obviously to walk there, and there's lots of points from which it's on the Jurassic Coast, so there's tons of beautiful ways in to walk to it, and there's, you can visit from there, you can walk off to like the most incredible bits of cliff edge. There's like preserved World War II bombed villages, there's caving you can do, loads of climbers go around there, but if you bring an empty water bottle, they'll give you a pint in that for the rest, for the next bit of your walk as well, which is amazing.
What's it called?
The Square and Compass. And so that's fantastic. It's this Lulworth Skipper would be in celebration of the Square and Compass in Worth My Travels. I also almost don't want people to know about it too much, but I've done it now.
You're just too late. Yeah.
I'm already booking my trip.
So. Yeah, it's lovely.
I just looked it up, and the Lulworth Skipper is a butterfly. Apparently.
Oh, nice.
Well, I've got some information on that because I've done my research.
Speak away.
Yeah. So it's, as you know, Robbie, it's a tiny butterfly found only in the very south of Dorset, specifically the village of Lulworth, where it is plentiful.
Oh, wow.
It barely moves from there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Lulworth's amazing. It's where Durdle Door is, and it's... It's just really pretty, tiny little cove.
Well, that's why the butterflies like it.
Wow!
And they breed on patches of tall grass. They like it to be tall,
right?
It has to be tall, and no shorter than 10 centimeters for egg laying. And my favourite question I found on Google about Lulworth Skippers. I know we're going off on a tangent. Talking about cider, and it's quite an interesting cider as well.
Yeah.
Is that someone said, what is the difference between a Lulworth Skipper and a small skipper?
Oh,
great question.
A small skipper is obviously not a butterfly. They said, and the answer was, well, size is a key point in identification.
Yeah.
Lulworth Skippers are smaller than large skippers and slightly smaller than small skippers. Not that this helps much if you're not seeing them together.
What a plot twist. That's smaller than small skippers. Yeah. I did not have that now.
Fabulous.
I've just looked up the Square and Compass in my mind. Outdoor tables made of stone.
Yep. Oh. And that's the other thing it's famous for around there is stone carving. There's lots of ancient Purbeck stone quarries around there and some currently functioning ones. But most of the houses around there are built with that stone. And it's pretty awesome. Quite often there'll be just someone just chiseling away.
It looks like if Stonehenge had a pub. It looks like that.
It's exactly that. Yeah. It's, and there's normally someone in there sort of, sometimes brilliant, sometimes massacring classic songs in a folk style.
What I like as well about this is that on their website that I've just looked up here, they've got, because it's winter, they've got like fake snow coming down
really the website nice on there. The website.
Like it's a bit like, it's a very sort of like 2001 website.
Big time, yeah. They're one step away from having used Comic Sans, aren't they? On that. That's definitely a WordPress homemade job.
What do you look for in a scrumpy then?
So I think my tastes have changed over the years. I don't want it to be too sweet, but also I don't want it to make me feel thirsty. Some of them are so dry that I think they sort of dehydrate you live. That's not what I want. I want something in between. I want a dry scrumpy that's on the medium end of dry,
okay,
as opposed to the other way around, with a... my absolute favourites have got like that kind of tiny bit of fizz, like a little bit of life in there. So they're not completely flat, just a little bit of energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And I don't care what colour they are, actually. Yeah. I like big flavours. Yeah, I suppose the older I get, the less taste buds I've got. I need to be blown away a little bit, something.
Yeah, I like those. I like those complex on the drier end of things as well. Something. I like one that does make you sort of go...
I
like one that feels a little bit like you're chewing through it.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Those really thick 10%
exactly
sort of job.
Well, those in a small amount, yeah. But if you're gonna have a pint after a walk, actually the older I get, the weaker I want it to be as well, to be honest. I'd rather be able to sit there and have a couple
I'm thinking more of an end of the day scrumpy. If you're staying somewhere, you get given one of these things you could take away, have it at home,
nightclub,
and then go to sleep.
Gorgeous.
You mentioned filling up your water bottle while you're walking.
Yeah.
I enjoy a country walk, and I remember I've mentioned this again on here before because I've just not got that many stories. Quite repetitive. But my friend Al and I were going for a country walk.
So this was just for Jess.
Well, that's very much real pub energy.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. We thought we're going to have a country walk. We like the bit where you get to a pub, and there's some of the best pubs. We have like a pint, some of the best pints when you get to a pub after a long walk. But we thought we'll take some cans with us. What genius. Did it. We were going, we've uncovered something brilliant here, having cans on the way. It ruined it because it made the pint not as good when you got to the destination.
Yes, 100%. I wouldn't say, don't drink on the way to the pub.
No.
But once you've had the magic pint at the end point, If you're walking back as well, or continuing the walk, that's when you get your takeaway.
Yeah. Great. Okay. Yeah, so good. Yeah. Every day just.
And it
day.
Also has to be a walk where there's going to be wee opportunities or like some foliage at least for that. if you're going to do that, you don't want to be.
One of the benefits of being a man is that the world is your own.
That's true.
One of the few benefits of being a man. that looks an absolutely fabulous pub and a terrific first choice. Anything else to add about the Scrumpy?
You can buy it in jerry cans.
Oh,
from their website, which is quite fun.
Really fun.
Quite heavy to carry on a walk. I imagine you might need a bit of help. But what I kind of, I don't know tons about cider, and I started reading a bit about Lulworth Skipper, and it's very clearly proper, matured, real cider made from 100% apple juice. That's really important. And Martin Inwood is the guy that makes that cider. And I think there's a big thing amongst kind of craft proper cider makers are not, they're happy about how 20 odd years ago cider became more popular and it helped everybody sell a bit more cider. But they're basically going, most things called cider are not cider.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Because I think it has to be the proper, like, camera's definition of cider is 100% apple juice, or it can't have this sugar or stuff. So he actually had done a list on Facebook of things that are not cider, and it's got pretty much every cider brand that you've ever heard of is not cider.
Incredible.
Are there cider brands you've heard of cider?
I don't know. Well, now. That's interesting, now isn't
it? I've got a really pretentious assumption there. Yeah. Surely the ones that are branded as being crafty, like Aspel's.
Surely
the ones that come in a tall, thin, dark bottle.
Yeah, can we take Aspel's to bar? Can we find out?
K's Rosie. A proper cider.
Kestrel. Yeah. That's a proper word. Proper in some ways, isn't it? Crikey. Yeah. So I remember traveling around China with a friend who's also from the West Country. She's from Devon, though. And she's from the inferior much bigger Devon. And by about 6 weeks in, we were both desperate for potatoes and cider, or one or the other.
Toast.
Not necessarily
toast
together.
I found.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a big miss.
And we walked past, the first red flag should have been the name. We walked past somewhere called Rave of Disco Nightclub. And but it said outside ciders, and we were like, well, we're going in. And we opened the drinks menu, and it was the most bizarre place. It had an enormous popcorn machine, and it's really hard to work out where you would order a drink from. And then eventually we were given a menu, and under ciders it just said Smirnoff Ice. That's what we had in there.
That's blowing
out. Heartbreaking. And even worse, when we found a street vendor who was making fried potatoes a few weeks later. And we were like, yes, come on, let's go and get a bowl of them. We bought a bowl, turned out to be sheep's brains.
Oh, I think they turned out to be Smirnoff Ice as well.
Wow. Sheep's brains, just kind of thinly sliced and fried?
Cubed, so it really did look like spuds. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And did you try them?
Yeah, pretty rough.
Yeah, it doesn't sound great.
No.
Not going to overtake potatoes as a snack of choice. Well, there we go. Yeah. What's your second choice from draft? Is it sheep's brains?
No, it's some people were going to argue worse. It's the lager called Foster's.
Never heard of it.
Never heard of it.
Why Foster's?
I think this is more to do with like a connection with it and a bunch of memories and a real moment in time. As a student, I worked in a pub on and off for years called the Marquis of Granby in New Cross, next to Goldsmiths University, even though wasn't where I was studying. It was just like going back in time, going in there. It's an Irish pub. I don't know if it's still like this, but it was just gloriously rough. People would come in and out just casually selling stolen goods. and you learnt the ones the landlords did and didn't like.
Was selling stolen. Yeah. Some of them were okay.
And the landlord was, I think he was in sort of half worst kept secret relationships with two of the ladies that worked there full time. So they really hated each other. And like to be kind of you worked there, but you weren't, like, I never got fully involved in the sort of internal politics, but it was like working inside this amazing soap opera.
And all, say, it sounds like your own sitcom.
Yeah, it was really fun. And as long as you never got too involved or invested, I think. I was really badly paid. It was a sports pub. So it was, if it wasn't rammed with students, it was rammed with... if it wasn't ironically rammed with like the most artsy, gender fluid kind of, you know, Goldsmiths is really like left field arts university. And then, but the locals who'd come in to watch sport were big, violent men. And it was, those worlds colliding was fun.
A sort of Millwall-ish.
Yeah,
area,
worrying that, so, which is frankly the worst of the worst in terms of violence and stuff. So it would regularly kick off. And but universally, what I did was pour pints of Foster's. I just poured pints of Foster's all day, all night, all day, all night, all day. That's all. It was the most popular drink by miles.
Wow.
It was obviously cheap. That was one of the cheaper ones. And so I drank a fair bit of that at the time.
I think a lot about Foster's advertising.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Well, God, that's been on a journey, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because one of my favourite adverts of all time is a Foster's advert from the 80s, which is when they used to have the tagline, "Don't you just hate it when that happens?"
Oh, yeah.
And they were... Do you know that the move from the 80s to the 90s in alcohol advertising went from being really quite funny? There was some great beer ads.
That was amazing. Was that the Heineken one where the...
Yes.
Where and how refreshing was the tagline?
Yeah,
and the lads in the pub and there's an old man. And he goes, "So, got any stories about the war?" And the old man goes, "Nah." And he goes, "Just that, that's it."
Yeah,
the tagline. Exactly. Oh, how refreshing.
I love Carlsberg. That's probably amazing. the best adverts they used to do, wasn't it? It was like,
yeah.
Probably the best.
Yeah. Such a such you've ever had. Yeah.
I think there was a great...
don't do da da da, but if they did.
Yeah.
And Heineken did, there was a really famous one of refreshing the parts other beers cannot reach when they did the sort of Pygmalion advert of the posh woman trying to talk Cockney. Like they were trying to get her to say the water in Majorca don't taste like what it ought to. She was going, "The water in Majorca don't taste like how it should."
Yeah,
and then
yeah,
she'd
yeah.
have a Heineken and then she could finally get it. So like a lovely ad.
Yeah.
And Foster's did a great one as well. It's just a guy sitting in a bar outside and he's got a pint of Foster's and then a really nice car comes up and he turns to the bar and he goes, "Oh, the car like that, don't you wish the guy's going to be a real potato head?" And he gets out and he's quite a good looking guy. You go, "Oh, right, I'll settle for stupid." And then people start going, "Hey, professor, you join us for a drink." He's like, "Okay, he's got the car, the looks, the brains. He's got making the most unpopular guy in town, right?" And then there's like a lovely bit where everybody's greeting him and he's going,
yeah,
come on, shaking hands. He's like, "Oh, well, at least he's not the kind of guy you want to have a drink with." And he comes up to the bar and he goes, "A snowball, please." And they look at him, and they look at each other like that. And the barman dips down to get the snowball, start preparing it. And as he dips down, it goes, "And a Foster's for me, please." And he comes up absolutely disgusted. It's like such a lovely ad. It's still good.
Yeah.
It's still good.
Yeah.
And then it went in the 90s, went into the sort of more laddie sort of, it wasn't as good. But it's like, I just think Foster's in the 80s had some great ads.
They all
really
did.
Funny.
Yeah. Lovely stuff.
Yeah.
That is fabulous. Great. Well, Foster's in. Then, I mean, there's no decision here. It goes wherever you choose goes in.
Yeah.
We're not voting. but yeah, wonderful stuff.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
it's not just draft selections, really, because you get two bottles or cans.
Okie dokie.
What are you going to pick as your first choice to go in your pub?
I'm going to pick Brooklyn Lager Special Effects.
Oh.
Ooh.
Wow. Oh. Well, and we can see magically it appearing in front of us quite slowly.
Do talk to us about
it. Oh, wow. Look at it. Just, it's shimmering. It's almost like... It's yeah, there it is.
Wow. Yes, please.
Wait, fabulous. And look at that. The Marine Underwater has even provided a
I'm 100% having one of these.
Bottle opener. There you go.
May I
like a glass?
Oh, I'd love a glass.
This is a terrific choice. And for those who are unaware of it, it's a low alcohol lager, isn't it? 0.4%.
0.4%. I learned some fascinating things about low alcohol beers recently.
Go on.
And I bet you already know them. But
no, tell us.
I listened to a fabulous podcast series called Sort Your Shit Out or something like that with Ellie from Scummy Mummies and an expert on alcohol. And basically she's begun drinking more, not worried about addiction or anything, but drinking more than she wanted. Well, mine, you know, without noticing, started drinking a lot more during the lockdowns. And then when the lockdowns finished, noticed that that was kind of carrying on and was like, I just want to reframe my relationship with drinking. And I had had a similar thing over the last few years for various reasons. But you're going to have to show me how to use that, by the way.
I don't know.
Oh, yes. This one is, it's a weird... It's there.
Ah, okay, great.
Yeah. You demonstrate.
Because I remember I had trouble with this as well the first time. Yeah.
Probably it will again now. Which way around is it?
That can't be how you do it.
And I've been thinking, I've been thinking, oh, but if I have a 0%, if you know, if I have an alcohol-free beer or a low alcohol beer, maybe that's cheating because it's still a bit of alcohol. Mm. And it's also, you know, is it still... It's still not like a healthy drink compared to if you had a kombucha or something. Alcohol-free beer is actually really good for you in terms of being quite a great isotonic drink full of minerals. And it's actually far less sort of processed and full of crap than a Diet Coke or something like that. So I was like, well, that's brilliant. And people even sometimes have it like after a run. It's like a rehydration drink because it's got so many great minerals and stuff in it. So like, that's brilliant. And they said... Don't like, because there are people in kind of in recovery and stuff in terms of alcohol, and you can drink it because these like 0.4% ones, if you do feel an effect of it, it's a placebo thing, really, because there's that much alcohol in orange juice.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is amazing. Yeah.
It's not.
And of all the alcohol-free beers, I think there are loads of brilliant ones now. God, they've been on a journey over the last probably just year or 18 months.
Yeah.
They used to be so soapy and chemically and rank. And this is one of my absolute favourites now. I think it's delicious and hoppy and lovely. And the other one I really love is Beavertown, and is it called Laser Quest? It's called Laser something. Oh, that is absolutely lovely as well in a can. And that's like really light and citrusy IPA.
Yeah, we've been going on a bit of a alcohol-free beer journey lately. Something I did a video for my YouTube channel recently where I tested like 20 different alcohol-free beers, and there's such a range from the utterly disgusting to ones that you're going, I can't believe this isn't alcoholic.
Yeah.
I find I've got into this sort of thing quite recently, and I found that it does feel like you're having, it feels different from having a soft drink. It does feel like you're drinking.
If scratches
you're
that friends. Itch. Mm. And I think it's like, well, because if you're a comedian, you are around alcohol all the time. So it's very easy to get into a pattern of not being hammered all the time. And I'm for a long time wouldn't set, I'm not very good with absolute rules, but generally would never drink before a gig. But actually the idea of a drink to decompress afterwards, and actually beer is what my body asks for in that situation, because I kind of like come down really from your gig. This would scratch that itch 100%. And also I think there's something nice when you're having an evening in. I think alcohol's a lovely thing to have knowingly as a drug. to unwind and go, I've stopped working now.
Yeah.
Like, I'm stopped using my brain. I'm relaxing now before I go to sleep. And I think it also scratches that itch if you're at home and don't want that to be the only way you've got of switching off at the end of your day.
Yeah.
And this one is delicious and hoppy and lovely.
I find it hard to convince myself that it isn't like, I'll be going, I've got to go for a run later. I can't actually...
No, I was exactly thinking that. I've still got some PE to do today. But I was like, well, we'll be fine, if anything.
Yeah,
lovely.
A terrific choice. Dan, have you developed a favourite alcohol-free beer from the many ones you've tried recently?
Well, I've never tried this. I'm going to try this.
It is lovely.
Tasting notes from their website. Peeled grapefruit and fresh zesty hop aromas with a clean bitter edge. It's quite a dark.
Mm-hmm. I think I really love citrusy beers.
Yeah, I do.
That is really nice. Mm, I haven't had that. That's the first one I've had that. That is really nice.
Lovely, isn't it? And Lucky Saint, if you're looking for a kind of
Lucky Saint,
nice. And that's on draft now and in a bunch of pubs, which is great.
Big drop.
Lovely, yeah.
I get that delivered by the milkman.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. Bougie.
Yeah, it's good.
Really nice.
That's very nice.
That's pretty middle class.
'70s and the modern day combining.
Brooklyn Breweries, it's an interesting story, actually.
Tell me about that.
I won't go into too much detail. What I quite like is that it started by a guy called Steve Hindi, and he was a foreign correspondent in the Middle East, and he couldn't get a lot of beer because not a lot of alcohol drunk where he was writing from. So someone sent him a home brewing guide, but even that was a bit dodgy. So the guide was called Perfected Techniques of the Ebullition of sugar, water, and a suitable catalyst to form an acceptable Aramco assimilative imbibable potion appropriate for consumption. So it didn't sound like home brewing kit.
Really nice.
And he started doing homebrew and stuff, and then it got a bit dangerous where he was, and his wife and kids went, going back to America, come on. And Brooklyn had been a massive brewing place in America in the early part of the 20th century and before, not during Prohibition. But they'd almost all died out, and he said, I'm going to bring it back. And so he started Brooklyn Brewery, and that's how it happened.
Wow.
And the guy that is the brewmaster, Garrett Oliver, has got some nice videos on YouTube. He'd be a great guest to have a chat with. He's really charismatic and really cool. He's like really like dapperly dressed gentleman. Wow. And he, basically, Brooklyn was doing really well. Came over to Europe.
Yeah.
And European sellers and makers said, look, we want a non-alcoholic beer. He's like, no, I'm not interested. What's the point? I don't want. And they said, I learned all this stuff that it's situational. Yeah. And he kept saying that word, situational. And they were saying to him, look, you were talking about going for a walk, but if you want to go, and you were saying how it can ruin the first part of the walk if you take a bit. If you want to go for a hike, or if you want to work out, like you were saying, after people doing it after a gym, you don't want alcohol. So he started to think about, maybe this is a good idea. So he sort of took it on as a challenge, and this is what he came up with. So
he's
done a couple of nice videos about it. It's really interesting. And it is. It's a really
I can understand the resistance. It's really interesting, I think. But all it takes is so often it's really hard to change an opinion once it's bedded in. But it's just about how you frame it, isn't it, really? I think it's similar to, I think the initial backlash to alcohol-free beers is similar to people who say, I don't understand how vegetarians and vegans want to eat fake meat.
Yeah.
But I heard it put brilliantly the other day. It was but no one ever challenges omnivores or carnivores who eat meat that's been reformed into something that doesn't seem like meat. You'd never have a go at a carnivore for having a fish finger or a nugget, and that's been made to be nothing like meat.
Yes.
And so, I don't know, I was that's such a good one.
But also I guess it was about taste, like you say.
Yeah.
For so long.
Took a while to get that right. It was pretty soapy
for a bit. It
didn't taste
great.
Yeah.
I used to just think, what's the point? Because I would think, I can just get a soft drink or something like that. But then, as you say, it's
delicious.
It's more of a sort of, they're delicious, and there's more purity of the ingredients in a lot of them than there is in a Diet Coke sort of thing. So. Yeah,
that is really nice. Actually.
Terrific choice.
Enjoying that.
And, I'm very glad this is the one that's materialised in here and not a can of Foster's.
Yes, thank you so much. Thank you. Phew-wee.
What's your next bottle or can?
Oh, it's less classy. It's a Desperado.
Wow.
Don't know if you've ever had it.
I have.
I've never had it.
Okay, so it's a sweetened lager with, I think, a bit of tequila in it. Mm. And the reason that's in there is because I used to go on before that was available. It's available here now, and I think even our big adopted German supermarkets have got their own knockoff versions of it called things like yummy Mexican lager with tequila in, Arado. Yeah. When I was about 12, 13, mid-teens, I'd still be going on holiday with my parents, with my cousins, but obviously by that point we were keen to like go out and have fun and see what's happening down the disco and stuff like that. And we would be able to get served in France year on year on our camping holidays with our parents. And that would be what we drank, Desperados.
Really?
Yeah. Delicious at the time.
And is it nice? I've never tried
To enjoy one as an adult and it's too sweet for me now.
I've never really been on board with it, yeah. Personally.
They're really quite sweet.
And the tequila in a beer doesn't really, it's not something I want. No. I don't mind a nice tequila separately. I don't want to be constantly having the taste of tequila over the course of a bottle.
Well, I have got some Asda reviews from it.
oh, gosh.
that's just journalism.
Just tried it for the first time. It's the future. That's one. It's one of my favourites. I'm a lady who doesn't drink beer or lager usually, but these are very drinkable. I like the I'm a lady.
That sounds like it's been written by the PR agency.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah. Don't put women.
And then my favourite, well, I think this is how people should review everything. Great beer, if you like the taste of it. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So like,
You might like this. Beer if you hate it.
Brilliant.
Do we know anything about the brewery where it's made, anything like that?
Well, it started in France.
Okay, there we go.
And they said they saw a gap in the market for a beer with a new exciting twist. Do you know what? No one's ever tried beer with tequila in it.
When that person came up with that idea and said to his mates, I'm going to make beer, but we're going to have tequila in it. Everyone else would be going, yeah, cool, mate. They'd be thinking, you're going bankrupt. Look at him now.
Yeah, rich as anything. Yeah, they've sold it off to... The Zlatzi Bazant Brewery now does it. It was a French brewing company before. I like on their official site, they say the combination of fresh beer with a Latin spirit gives the unique taste sensation with an edge. With this beer, you can turn every moment into a special event, from a toast moment at home to the biggest festivals. But it sounds like it was.
Every time I don't want every it, moment. Yeah, at some point I'll want to sleep. it's got a place in my heart for sure. Yeah. And I remember when it first became available here, I think it was probably still a student, being like, woohoo!
Yeah, I remember it being appearing just suddenly and being everywhere.
And I remember being like, I know that. And everyone else was like, how? And I think it was just holidays in France as a kid.
I had that with the song Cotton Eye Joe. If you remember that?
If you want to feel better, that's the first single I bought. CD from Woolworths.
I went on a geography field trip. I imagine I was either doing GCSE or A levels. I went on a geography field trip to Holland, and everywhere we went, this song was playing, but it was nowhere at home.
Oh.
And I came back going, there's this amazing song.
It's an absolute banger. He's going to love it.
Cotton Eye Joe. My friends are on the trip and we're telling everyone a song, Cotton Eye Joe. But we just thought it was something that was in Europe and would never come here. And then like 2 months later, Cotton Eye Joe appears on every resident. We're it's the song. It's Cotton Eye Joe.
We already know it.
Yeah. But
we've already got the dance.
Oh, the CD single of that had 8 versions of the same song on it.
I've got it somewhere at home. Yeah,
me too. In the attic.
Yeah. It's like an album of a single.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There we go. So your second choice wasn't Cotton Eye Joe.
It was Desperado.
Desperado.
Love it.
Do you enjoy a pub quiz?
I absolutely love a pub quiz.
Do you?
You are in luck then. Because Dan has a pub quiz.
It's pub quiz time.
Okay, phones away. Put a gag on Siri. It's quiz time. Elvis's black belt was in karate. I saw it on QI. No half points for saying J.K. Rowling is the lead singer of Jamiroquai.
Moira Stewart.
No, I'm afraid it was Gordon Honeycomb.
It's one of the few things that I think I don't really understand why I love them, because I'm not very good at them.
Okay.
But it's good. I think it's good to be able to enjoy things you're crap at. So
Yeah. Well, I like to tailor them to the tour guests.
Okay.
And you are a weightlifter, aren't you?
Yeah, I am, yeah.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
Yeah,
and tell us a bit about that, because I've read a bit, but how long have you been doing it for?
a couple of years now, about, well, well, sort of complicated, but I probably started dabbling about 6 years ago, but just in sort of bits and bobs in a commercial gym. A little bit of the types of lifting that you would probably classify as powerlifting, like deadlifting and squats and stuff like that. But for the last 3 years, I've been training in a CrossFit gym where the focus is, you do still do all of that and a lot more strict work, but you also do Olympic weightlifting, which is snatch and clean and jerk. And that's a lot more technical. And it's almost like a sort of mixture of strength and dance. If that's, it's, you are.
Oh, that's because I was trying to explain it, explain what weightlifting was to my son, who he thought it was just doing stuff in
the gym.
Well,
that's bodybuilding.
Yes.
Yeah, so I've done a radio series. There's sort of four, there's bodybuilding. I think when you say I do weightlifting, most people assume you mean you're a bodybuilder. Mm. And I absolutely don't do that. That also involves really restricting and controlling what you eat, which I'm not interested in doing at all. Mm. And that is purely to change your aesthetic and what you look like. Whereas every other type of weightlifting is about functionality and about being, so I like feeling strong and working. I love the meritocracy of it. I love the fact that the harder you work, the better you get. It's really good for your joints and your muscles and stuff. But I just find it incredibly fun compared to stuff that makes you out of breath, which I also enjoy these days. Mm. But I don't know, it's just great. And with Olympic lifting, you're working on your strength and your power and your explosivity and your timing, but also on your mobility, because you're encouraged to sort of move the bar and catch the bar in ways that, ideally you can squat to depth, because the faster you can move, and it just helps you do the move technically. And it means you can be lighter and lift more, if you know what I mean. So you can move more versus your mass if you've got that technique perfect. And that technique involves having good mobility. So it's just a great thing to keep doing into old age, she says at 40.
It's fascinating, isn't it? When you see like the good Olympic weightlifting. I did CrossFit for a few years when I was living in Kent.
Great.
And I loved the Olympic. That was my favourite bit of it. I wasn't like... Burpees can get in the sea.
Anyone who likes them to perv. Yeah.
but the Olympic weightlifting thing is my favourite bit, sort of thing, because I loved the stuff like when you're doing your clean jerk, and you're not sort of lifting the bar over you, you're
getting
lifting
under it
and then getting under it, sort of things. So it's almost like bars in the air, and you're like, all that sort
it's
of
thing. It's so clever that you sort of learn over time, and everyone at a different pace. It's taken me ages to learn to essentially go in two directions at once, effectively. Yeah. That's the bit that feels like a dance to me. And especially with snatch, which I think is the most technical, where you effectively have to get it from the floor to above your head in one fluid motion. But you lift it from the floor, and then when it gets to your knees and your hands are quite wide on the barbell, you lift it very quickly up to your hips. And then it's just a shrug. You're not meant to use your arms at all. It's all the power really has come from your legs and arse. And as it's floating up, as quick as you can, you get under it and ideally land in a complete squat and then just stand it up. Yeah. It's... when that goes well for me, it still is like a kind of magic, and I don't quite know how I've done it.
It always just looks terrifying. Someone's going to drop the thing on their head. Just ugh. Well, it's not about weightlifting.
No. Okay, great.
Why did you bring it up?
Well, what it led me to was Olympics,
and it
led me to classic. Sorry, I'm going on my 80s adverts and but classic question of sport.
Nice.
Type questions. Okay. So this is, I'm going to tell you some terms from an Olympic sport, and you need to tell me what the sport is, where those terms are used.
Great. Okay?
So I don't know this either. Yeah. Okay. We are in friendly competition here.
Yes. Oh, fun.
Yeah, and Dan will ask the questions. We don't answer now. After the break, we'll come back and answer them then. So we're going to have a thinking time.
Lovely. Oh, so nice and chilled.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like a pitcher's round in a real place.
Yeah.
In your own time.
Okay, so which Olympic sport uses the following terms? Fletching, knocking point, shaft. Robbie laughed at shaft.
Yes, I did. Yeah, yeah. Silently, though, because I'm a pro. Yeah. I couldn't quite keep in the facial laughing, but the noise I managed to restrain.
Next one. Which Olympic sport uses the following terms? Hogu, Jusim, Arp, Chagi. Okay. And a third one, fakey, goofy, Ollie. Okay. Have a think.
Right.
Can I ask a question?
Yep.
Are these all summer Olympic sports or some of the winter Olympic sports, or is it?
These
no,
are
us?
All
main Olympics.
Summer Olympics.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Okay. Wonderful. Well, that brings us to the end of the first part of The Moon Underwater. For everyone who is not a subscriber of our Patreon, if you would like to subscribe, head to moonunderpod.com and sign up to get ad-free extended episodes a day early, a monthly bonus podcast, and access to the Moon Underwater Social Club on Facebook. We'll see you soon in part two. We'll continue creating Jessica's dream pub.